Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Carpcast. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm great, it's good to be back. Well, good to be back on the Carpcast. Not good to be back in England because I had a brilliant 2 weeks in America and it was lovely weather. Got back to England and it's like single degrees temperatures, cold, wet, rain.
Yeah, it's getting...
I'm itching to get the rods out properly in it now.
It's getting really cold at nights now, so it's that funny time of year where it's dead damp and misty and cold some nights. We've had a few like bitey mornings where it feels a little bit frosty almost, and then the next night it's cloudy and it's like it's too hot in bed, you've got all the windows open and it's like 18-19 degrees, so it's a bit in between at the minute.
Yeah, I've managed to get one night on the bank since I've been back and it was absolutely roasting in the bag. You know, I've got one of these sleep system things. I actually took the top cover off. Yeah. It was that warm. It was also absolutely slinging it down all night, and I'd rather not have gone, and I caught nothing. Found a big snag open water and lost two markers in it, but...
Nice, noddy.
Punishment from the carp gods.
What, for leaving them for 2 weeks?
They missed me.
And they made you blank.
Yeah.
Zero. You've not had many blanks on there this year, have you?
I've had a few. You know, I've had mostly, when I've caught, it's mostly been a multiple. But I've had a few blanks in between. You know, I don't get it right every time. Nobody does.
No, certainly not. I've seen a few fish around the net as well that have been caught this month. Biggest one being Johnny Mac. Johnny had...
The brute,
47 from Pingewood, which is quite, I think I'd expected that fish to be a little bigger this time of year. It's been 50, it's been a good 50, hasn't it, a few times in the past.
Yeah, how old is it though? It just seems to have been around forever, that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was kind of the mug fish in that lake. I remember maybe 12 years ago, sort of after we fished Yateley. A few people went over there, including Terry Hearn, who I think he caught the brute three times while he was trying to catch the big one. There was another 50 in there. The brute was low 40 then.
Yeah, the 50 was one called the Jockey, if I remember rightly.
That's right, and it died a year or two later, the Jockey, which is a shame, really. It died the year I got a ticket on there. You had to do something... I forget how it worked now, but there was only so many night permits. You could get a club permit pretty easy, but then you had to buy a night syndicate. And I just got the night syndicate and it died. But then as what happens when the biggest fish in a lake dies, the next biggest kind of like takes over, and it did. It just kept going up in weight. But I know it was a fairly easy to catch one. You don't hear of it anywhere near as much now. That fish, unless it just went quiet because it went so big. I do know I was seeing it around a lot, 47, 48, 49, and all of a sudden it vanished out of the papers, out of Carp Talk. And it's usually a good sign that a fish has gone 50 when that happens. And then I did hear of it.
I believe it doesn't.
Go on.
I believe it has gone over 50 at least once or twice.
Yeah, more, it's been over 50 for a good few years, I think. So it's a cracking result. Johnny Mac's had a good few fish in the last 12 months, I would say. He seems to be flying, and we keep missing each other time-wise as far as getting him on the Carpcast, but he has agreed to come on, and I've spoke to him a number of times over the last few weeks, and we hope to have him on very soon, maybe even for the next episode. I keep promising that. Well done to John anyway. There's another guy who's a bream angler, really. A guy that I play poker with who's a keen angler, called Harry Zammit. He's been over to Euro Aqua, a place we've spoke about loads on here. It's the place with the 100-pounders in Hungary. It's got lots and lots and lots of big fish, and like I say, Harry's he's a pleasure angler, fishes for bream mainly and occasionally carp, you know, the odd holiday in France and stuff. But he's been over to Hungary with Nash's Jason Ryder, who's a good friend of his, Jason Ryder, of bait making expertise and fame. Works for Gary in the Bait Factory, I think. And they were fishing together, fishing to a shared marker, and Harry had it off. I think he had quite a few 50s, 60, and culminating in a 96 pounder, which was bigger than him. Harry's a little guy, and this fish is definitely, if you stood it on its tail upwards, it's definitely higher and wider than Harry, I would say. It's a decent picture of him in the water. But yeah, well done to Harry. We spoke loads about Euro Acra, and we're going to be doing a live broadcast from the side of Euro Acra next month, because Ian McMillan is going over there again. We did record him from Euro Acra the last time he went, and then we deleted the recording, if you remember. But we promised not to this time, so he's promised to do an interview while he's on there and fill you guys and girls in about the lake. Hopefully he'll catch a 90 or maybe even a 100 pounder while he's there. Yeah, more on that in a couple of episodes time.
I think the Adam Penning episode has set a precedent for interviewing people on the bank. They've got to finish it with a run.
Yeah, I think whenever we do on the bank interviews, it needs to be done at bite time. It makes the editing harder, though. It makes my job a little bit longer. We are planning to do maybe some live carp casts as well. At some point, we've been discussing it today about doing some kind of live stream, and you'll still be able to get it on your iTunes, Stitcher. What other platforms are we on?
iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. What's that one you found? Is it podcastchart.com?
Yeah, podcastcharts.com. We keep finding the podcast in all sorts of different places that we haven't put it. There must be a lot. And to be honest, they go up instantly as well. The second we put them up, they're on there. So there must be a number of podcast sites that just automatically link to iTunes or whatever, whatever podcast sites are out there, because we do keep appearing in various places.
All legal.
All legal, yeah, we hope. I mean, if anybody else has got some sort of broadcasting network, internet radio station or whatever, and you want to broadcast the Carpcast, then you just have to ask. You can have it. The more people that listen to this, the better. Just ask us, and we will give you a high quality copy instead of the one that you might be downloading second or third hand. By all means, you can have it and broadcast us to anybody you like.
Which will please the advertisers.
Yes, of course. Nice little link there to our ads.
See what I did there?
We do have some people that support the Carpcast. They are coming in thick and fast now. I'm not going to mention any that haven't started broadcasting just yet, but we are self-sufficient. It does seem that people want to advertise. One of our first official paying sponsors was DNA Baits. Which you can get them at www.dnabaits.com. We'd like to say a massive thank you to the guys there for supporting us, and especially for our listeners. They do a 5% discount on anything you want to buy. Any Carpcast listener who wants to buy something from DNA on dnabaits.com, use the checkout code or the discount code Carpcast5 in the discount box when you check out. So pretty much anything you buy, if you want to buy, like, they do some great 5 key, 10 key, 50 key packages on bait, like the SLK, the Nutter S, the Ocean X, all the different ones that they do. You can get 5% off those. They still do the Carpcast offer. I noticed on their website today, they in our first show, it was the cured Evo hook baits that Mark Holmes has caught all his fish on, and he's kind of championed those. They do a hook bait kit with free delivery and GLM powder as well. It's like a really high grade GLM powder. I think it was £20 delivered. That is currently still on the website, so I'm guessing if you put that in and then put the 5% code in, you could probably get another 5% off that, I would think. They do all sorts of stuff, you know, pellets, ground baits, glugs, soaks. There's loads of stuff on there. I was having a look at the candy sticks earlier, actually. I assume they float, but they just look like kind of flavored sweet sticks. It's in like the pop-up sections with the floral pop-ups and the wafters and everything. They looked pretty interesting. I know there's a little package coming out for us to try, and I'm really keen to have a look at some of their stuff, because a few of our friends use DNA exclusively, and they've got nothing but good things to say about them. So you can get 5% off anything you order on there. Use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out at www.dnabates.com. DNABates.com. And it supports us, so that would be great.
Yeah, it's great to have someone like DNA on board, because I remember years back, this is before you'd see DNA advertising in the magazines, there's a fella, Jason Trout, I don't know him personally, but we've got, you know, a few mutual friends, and you'd even back then you'd hear about, you know, this Jason Trout, he knows his bait, you know, he's, you know, whatever he knocks up, just get on it, a few people knew, and yeah, it's good to see it's turned into DNA, and they're out there, and they're going big.
And he loves the Carpcast too, so he must have good taste. Sounds like a lovely fellow, and I spoke to him on the phone, and he likes us, and you know, so much so they've decided to support us. So by all means, check out their baits, hook baits, and especially the Evo cured hook baits that Holmesy has had loads and loads of big fish on. So in fact, it's quite unusual for Holmesy not to have come up with another big one between carp casts, because he'd been on such a roll, hadn't he, that every time we came on he'd had another 40 or 50.
Yeah, he's slacking.
Yeah, he's slacking. So yeah, we also have the guys down at Cromwell.
Yes, the carp cast has its first official sponsor. So I'd like to thank Helen and Nathan of Cromwell Lakes for sponsoring episode 12. Let me tell you a bit about Cromwell Lakes. There's 18 acres with 18 swims. This is including a large disabled swim. There's an angler's lodge offering charging points, fridge freezer, clean toilets, free showers, a seated area inside and out. There's an on-site tackle shop stocked with terminal tackle and bait, including mainline and sticky baits. The car park is secure behind a locked gate. Nets, mats and slings are provided. But this is where it starts to get really impressive when we talk about the stock of carp. They are approaching 60 £30 plus fish and 7 known 40s, all in a Midlands day ticket venue. Prices start at £30 for 24 hours with discounts for longer stays. If you want to contact Cromwell Lakes, you can follow them on Twitter at Cromwell Lake. You can search for them on Facebook. You can check out their website, which is cromwelllake.com. Or give Nathan a ring. You can speak to him on 07816 243 023. And you might even see me and Jamie down there.
It makes me crack every time, that advert.
Yeah, I'm going to have to record another one, or we'll just do it live.
Yeah, Mark and his best radio voice.
Right, that's the first radio ads or anything I've ever recorded. I thought, I felt quite proud until I listened to it back.
it's called Bright Pop. Many years ago, I did courses in these sorts of things, and the radio voice, or the DJ voice, it's known as Bright Pop.
Yeah, I just made it up as I went along.
Yeah.
Can you tell?
I had 25 years of practice talking down a microphone to drunken people DJing and in bands and stuff. Hey there, now we're going to take you back to the 1960s. Yeah, I had a radio voice. It seems to have gone now, it's just gone northern.
That's not a bad thing.
Another way you can support us, or more directly me, is with my knowledge DVDs. I've been selling loads of them, selling one or two like literally every day, and I thank you loads. It's a two DVD package. You can get them on eBay. At the minute, just search The Knowledge Jamie Klosick and you'll find them. We'll put a link underneath the show, but it's two DVDs, they're a couple of hours long each, maybe slightly longer one of them, and just a tenner. So before DVDs go extinct, then grab it quick and get yourself some of the knowledge. And finally, we have the Northern Anglers Show. Northern Anglers Show is held at Event City in Manchester, which is right next door to the Trafford Centre. It will be our fourth show. We had 7,500 people there on the last show. The floor space is sold out. did last year, and it's sold out again now, 6 months before the event. But it's held on the 20th and 21st of February, and tickets are now on sale. You can buy tickets, including the VIP packs. The VIP packs all sold out last year. So basically what we do, it's a £40 offer, and you get a free ticket for either day, for the Saturday or the Sunday. And most of the offer packs are valued at about between £60 and £80, depending on what it is. So there's an MAP one, or there's two MAP ones actually, for all you match anglers. Any of those listening to us, there's a couple of different Witchwood ones, Matrix, there's a CC Moore pack. There's Nash sirens as well, the S5 bite alarms, which are the receiver ones. There's the Fox Fuck, the Fox, I nearly
the Fox
there.
What?
The Fox cooking kit. Cooking doesn't begin with an F. the Fox cooking kit, which was really popular. We sold about 120 of them last time, I think. So, yeah, they're all £40 each. You get a free ticket for either day. And you can get all this stuff or any of the other tickets, children's tickets or whatever, at northernanglingshow.co.uk. Or you can find us on Facebook. Talking of alarms, actually, I got a new set of alarms. I got the S3s, which are kind of the new version of the original Siren S1s. Used them for the first time last week. I did blank, but I had a good play with them. I really like them. I used to love the S1s, like how they actually worked. I wasn't totally into the fact that you had to do everything off the receiver. You know, if you wanted to turn the sensitivity down or turn the volume down or whatever. Like there was a bit of programming on the receiver. It was nice to do it from your bibby when it was raining and stuff. You know, it was a bit of a hassle if you just wanted to turn one of them down quickly. But these new ones, they're absolutely great. You used to use Delkims for a while, didn't you?
I had them for quite a while. Not the TXIs, I'm going back before then. I had them for about 10 years when it was just the heads.
Yeah, well, Delkims were like the rays. They seemed to be like the coolest alarms for a while. Like everybody had to have Delkims. I think it went back to the early days. Like when I was a kid, it was Optonics. My first alarms were Herons, they were called. They had like a little wire coming off
showing your age
to a sounder box, yeah, and they used to go when you pulled the it used to be like a bit of copper wire sticking out of them and you'd pull it across. I think then there was BJs, they were called, the old BJ bite alarm.
Remember the little Magnos as well?
Were they like the first roller one?
No, they were like a little black box with an orange needle working like the Herons.
Oh, that's right, yeah, I remember. And then Optonics were like the Rolls-Royce of alarms, but they were extremely quiet, the original Optonics, like super quiet. There was no volume on them or anything, and there was many times that I didn't get woke up by them. But Del Romang, who's the guy who started Delkim, he did the Delkim conversion. He actually got Nick for it, I think, and obviously bounced back by inventing the new Delkim. But basically Optonic had patented like everything, the way, if you remember how the Optonics used to work, it was like a roller wheel. And it had like
veins on, didn't it?
Yeah, it had veins, and as they spun, they broke a light beam, which was like an infrared light beam. That as the beam got broken, it'd trigger a noise. He basically he made them more sensitive. I think you could get like veins that had more veins in it, so I think there was like more beeps per kind of rotation. He put a big GPL speaker on the front, like on and off switch and volume control, so that they were like super loud. They used to change tone as you turned them up and down. You could get them like, if you got the volume in like the perfect spot, you could get them like really piercing, so you'd never sleep through them. And I know he actually got done for them and did very well not to go busto, I think, or to still be around. And then invented a new technique because of all the patents. He invented a system that worked kind of like a record needle works. So you know how a record needle works on vibrations.
I was going to say, did you ever hear the story how he came up with that?
No, go on.
Well, I'm sure we'll be corrected if it's wrong, but we say record needle. I'm sure I remember reading that he was had the eureka moment, laid in bed one night, ran downstairs and started running line over the needle on his record player, making a complete racket, followed on and developed the vibration technology for his Delkin from there.
Yeah, I mean, it was because it was new, like a totally new way of working. It was the first ones that kind of weren't, you know, everything was a wheel by then, some sort of rotating wheel. He captured the market for a lot of years for kind of, I mean, they were the most expensive alarms for a while. I mean, there's much more expensive now. The top of the range Fox alarms are, what are they, like £179 each or something, probably something similar for the receiver. I mean, they are great alarms. But you know, when you know, they are for serious anglers and people with deep pockets, obviously. But like the kind of the £110-120 level, which is you know, a decent quality alarm, which is like Delkin kind of had that price band sewn up, but it's kind of where these Nash alarms are situated. You know, like the new S3s. You know, they're targeted at that range, at that price bracket. It's like when people, you know, when manufacturers sell cars, they sell a 3 series, a 5 series, a 7 series, and each car manufacturer has an equivalent car in that price bracket, you know, that kind of size vehicle and whatever. And it's what, you know, that like £110-120 bracket for alarms, it's where the S3s are placed. And for me, there's no competition between the two. Like, I had Delkins because they were the... what were the ones that came out with the receiver? They were like the absolutely. I got more money when I sold them. They were in such demand, the Delkins, when I sold them, because I didn't like them. I got more money from them than what I paid for them. They still fetch decent money, but they cost me fish. Like the way that vibration thing works, I'm not. I don't know. I like the roller. I like to see my bobbin bouncing on a roller. You know, when you pull it up and down, I kind of get used to the line tension, just the way the bobbin bounces. And I remember you losing a fish because of a drop back on the Delkins on St. Ives. Do you remember that when you were in the bream peg? Was it?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't the alarm that fault. It was my line was going over like at marginal weed and silkweed.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I was fishing to that, like, you know, about 30-40 yards out, not far out that bar out there. As I was winding the rods in, as I was packing up that morning, I'm like winding in nothing, and the lead was still, everything still attached, it was just over the weed.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you used to fish the rods up in the air as well then, didn't you, with a quite slack line hanging down?
Right, yeah.
less of that. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, like our pal, every time he sees someone in his lake with Delkins, like he says, you know, that they're not good for indication. I mean, he's extremely fine-tuned his indication, but I know he was. He'll show people, like, he can pull your line at an angle where basically it doesn't make any noise, which is not ideal. But the Nash ones, I've not seen anyone using the S3s yet. I'm really impressed with my set. The best thing about them, I think, is actually when it beeps, generally something's happening, because it's got a speed sensor in it. So, you know, like if your lines are just slowly tightening at night, especially at this time of year when it's cold or whatever, like your lines tighten up under tension as it goes dark or whatever, that annoying where you just get single bleeps on your bobbin all night long as it tightens up, you just don't get that with the Nash ones. Well, it works automatically, like, so you could pull the bobbin like really, really slowly and not get a beep, and yet if you make any sort of sudden movement or sharp movement as if it was a liner or a fish or whatever, then it just bleeps, it just like kicks into action. And I'd surprise nobody else has ever done that, like, kind of because they measure the speed of activity as opposed to the distance. So like most alarms, when you turn the sensitivity down, it just makes your bobbin less sensitive. So like it works on a distance, so like on level one it's got to move a centimeter before it beeps, on level two it's 2 centimeters, level three it's 3 centimeters and stuff. So obviously when it's really windy or whatever, you have to lower the sensitivity because it keeps beeping all the time. Like your bobbin can move 4, 5, 6 inches on some alarms before it'll even register. Whereas on the S1s and now the S3s, as soon as there's any sort of sudden movement, like you can have your bobbin, you know, like in the, especially this time of year in the autumn, and you've got some leaves and stuff on the end of your line, and like your bobbin's just moving up and down very slowly, isn't it? If you get them in the wrong place, especially on a roller bobbin, it can just be beeping like every 30 seconds and drive you insane all night long, to the point of I've missed fish over the years, you know, when your kind of ears tune out when you're really tired in the middle of the night and your ears just shut off to the alarm because it's just keeping you up where it's really windy or whatever, then like something happens, your ears have kind of got used to it beeping, something happens in the night and you just kind of ignore it, just like just roll over, face the back of the bivvy.
You know, the other way of combating that, which I've been doing a lot this year,
yeah,
bowstrings, but what? String arm indicators, next to no false bleeps.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said, especially if you're fishing any further out, like 60-70 yards, a lot to be said for fishing pretty tight lines. We had this conversation before about slack lines on one of the earlier carp casts, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And it's basically, unless you've got zero weed in the lake, then it's fairly pointless fishing slack lines, unless you're fishing right in the edge or whatever. But yeah, I just like that speed thing. The fact that, you know, you can see your bobbin's going up and down or your line's tightening and you don't get a bee. But as soon as there's anything out of the ordinary, they spring into life just because of the speed sensor on it. So I think it's great. I'm looking forward to using them over the next few months.
Can I have your old ones?
I actually need two sets because this is the reason why I got them, because the secret lake I'm not technically supposed to be fishing. I need a separate kit for that because it's in situ for most of the time. So yeah, when I do normal fishing, I need a separate setup. Yeah, so I've basically got a scope set up, like the 9-foot scope rods. I've got 9-foot rods, my old reels, and obviously this separate set of alarms and an old bivvy, and it basically gets set up and left there. And then I have my normal set of equipment for when I'm being good.
For the Cromwell sessions.
For the Cromwell sessions and anywhere else, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how we got into alarms, but I'm pretty impressed with them, and I'm surprised no one else has like find a way to combat that annoying beep problem. You know, when they beep, you want something to be going on, basically, don't you?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Anything else you've seen on the net?
Well, before we just get off alarms, I just want to have a little appeal for our Carpcast Massive out there.
Ah, yeah.
Because my current alarms, I'm using the old Fox MMXRs, which are the little ones, long since discontinued, and I need a new receiver because mine's knackered.
They were those like little, almost triangle-shaped ones, weren't they?
Yeah,
like,
same
like
shape
pear-shaped.
As the... Yeah, that's the ones, and, well, I had my receiver, it's on my Mozzie Mesh, this is before I went on holiday, this... And I had a wasp in the bivvy, so I grabbed a flip-flop, whacked the wasp, and sent my receiver flying into some rocks and killed it. So if anyone out there does have one of those RX2 receivers laying around that they wouldn't mind selling me, drop us a message on the Carpcast and we'll talk.
Yeah, I had a set of them years ago, actually. I used them when we were on the Woolpack, if you remember.
You did?
They're pretty decent for budget alarms. They're only like £39 each or £49 each or something, weren't they? They were pretty good for considering they had a receiver. But I gave mine. I had about five of them in the end. I gave them to one of our friends, Jason. I don't know what he's done with them because I know he doesn't use them anymore. He might have sold them. He might have lost them. But I shall ask him as well if he's still got the receiver. Knowing Jason, he'll want some money for it. He's probably listening to this.
Oh, I don't expect hope for notes.
No, so if anyone out there has got one of those RX2 receivers, or if Jason's listening to this and you've still got my old one kicking about somewhere, then get in touch. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, at Carpcast, or is it The Carpcast, our Twitter handle?
At The Carpcast.
Yep, or at Dustitute will find me, or just search Jamie Klosick on Twitter, or you've got our Facebook accounts. The Carpcast, pretty busy now. We've got like nearly 2,500 likes on the Facebook Carpcast. Get messages all the time. People liking what we do, basically. It's still growing, this whole business. So, yeah, we're really pleased, and thank you for supporting us. We're going to do some events next year. We're going to do some, basically, Carpcast socials, where we're going to rent a lake out. Maybe get somebody like Terry Edmonds or someone to come down and do some coaching, Julian Cundiff or whoever, and basically you can come and pay us some money, come and fish for the weekend, get some coaching, have a bit of a drink and stuff, and fish a decent quality day ticket lake for the weekend. Get some food and stuff included. We'll do a barbecue and a social on the Saturday night, or breakfast in the morning. My missus doesn't know yet, but she'll be cooking it all. So yeah, we're gonna keep an eye out for that. I think we'll probably end up doing three of them, maybe four, during next year. We will post you as soon as we have the dates. Pretty sure one of them will be on Cromwell. Maybe do one a bit further down south as well, then probably in the Oxford area. I would have thought maybe Willow Lake or somewhere, if they'll have us, if we can find somewhere that'll have a 20 keen carp cast peeps. But yeah, give you a chance, Mark, to test your level 2 coaching out and come and teach us or something.
Yeah, I shall try my best. Yes, I have the qualification, might as well use it.
So there's a number of stories on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Where should we start?
Well, I think I've got Rob Hughes on the line from Carp Team England, because the event has started. We've had Rob on a number of times over the last few months, trying to rally the country up to get behind the Carp Team. He's released various details, such as the lineup on here, and he's in Spain now on the Ebro.
Hello, Jay. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I've got you. Sorry, I was stuck in a manager's meeting earlier and it took a little bit longer. There's a few international diplomatic incidents.
Really? Any Germans staking territory? Or?
Unfortunately, the Germans aren't here. The French and the Italians are having a bit of a barney, which is all useful.
What, just over swim territories, or?
No, the Italians have just... The one of the rules is that you're not allowed to drop the lead, and the Italians have been found dropping the leads, so as a result it's created a little bit of an incident, but the jury's out at the moment. I don't think they should be disqualified. I think it might possibly have been a genuine mistake, but I've said my bit at the manager meeting. They have a manager meeting every day, they have to stand up and say your piece, so I think they'll probably have a couple of fish disqualified off their list and then they'll be back in the game again.
Okay, and as far as I saw the 3 o'clock updates, where England were flying in the lead at one point, and the Croatians were catching up, weren't they, at 3 o'clock? What's the current state of affairs?
Well, current state of affairs is, forgive me, I don't even know what time it is. Is it Wednesday today as well? Is it Thursday?
It's Thursday, and it's 10 past 5.
It's Thursday today. Right, okay. So it's 6:10 here. I'm just by the side of Billy and Jamie, who are fishing in A section. It's an area not far away from where we practice. And obviously that helps, because we've got the tactics fairly sussed. We had a lot of practice. We've done an awful lot of prep. The whole team, I've got to say, they've been absolute stars. And we formulated a game plan, and we stuck to it almost to the letter, and it's paid off. We started off in all three sections with one tactic. We changed that tactic to our mid-game stage, and now we're putting a foot down through the middle, hoping it will increase. And then we've got one more slight change in tactic, and it seems to be working in all three sections. But Willie and Jamie have literally... they were in first place in their section yesterday. The Romanians have got an absolutely plum swim down by the dam wall, and they have now taken the lead in the section. The Croatians have caught up as well, and they just overtook Billy and Jamie, and we were thinking, you know what, we could really do with Billy and Jamie catching another fish. And they've worked the old Londers and Flowers magic, and they've just knocked out 16.5 kilo fish, which is 35 odd pounds. So
wow.
That puts us... right back up again. I think we're second in this section. On B section, we've got the French next door to us. When we did the draw, it's quite a complex procedure, but I did the first part of the draw, which was deciding who was in each section. So I can't put my boys in. The draw is into that. So we've got Billy and Jamie in A, we've got Harry and Alexi in B, and we've got Neil and Chris in C. What then happens is we have to draw for where our draw position is, and we came 23rd out of 24th, which we thought might be a bit of a blow, but it's random, so there it is. The third one is the allocation of the swims. And what you do is you draw one number, which is your Section A place. If you draw a low number in Section A, sometimes you get a mid number in Section B and then a high number in Section C. Sometimes they grade it on the basis of this is a good swim, this is a medium swim, this is a crap swim. So they work it on that basis. Anyway, we got an 8, a 16 and a number 1. 1 being an end peg. Lo and behold, Harry Charrington, Alexi Bygrave, they've got an end peg, they've got the French on the other side, and it's brilliant. So if you give Charrington and Bygrave just the faintest whiff of a carp anywhere within their radar, they'll catch him. And it started off a little bit tricky. We got some sinking trees in the water. They caught two. They had two bites and lost them both. And French had three. So minor change in tactics, and then they just put the foot down. So at the moment, they are leading their section by a good long way, and they're also in the gold medal individual position. And it's looking very, very good for them at the moment. I don't want to tempt fate, but once again, they're on the plan. They're trying hard, and it's working really, really well. C-section is where Neil and Chris are, or where, should I say, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But it's a really, really tough section. That's the scratching section. And the game plan was to try and get a quick bite with a certain tactic that we've got. And lo and behold, we had that bite, and it was a decent fish. It was a 14-kilo fish, so we ended up first in section. Last night, the action died off, and the fish moved out, and the water goes very deep very quickly, and they've pushed out nigh on 200 metres out. Now, the Croatians are incredibly big casters, and they're getting the distance a little bit. They've managed to catch two. Other than that, it's the odd randomer. But we do have a substitute who's a bit of an animal, which is Mark Bartlett. And I had a chat with Neil and Chris. And basically we decided that we were going to sub Neil out on the basis that Bart can regularly cast 200. And we put him in. I held Bart out. A lot of people, I won't say criticised me, but they raised eyebrows as to why Bart wasn't starting. This isn't the team because the team knew the plan. But other people are like, why aren't you playing Bart straight away? You know what, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came on so many times for United and scored a goal, and he could come on in the 89th minute and bang one in. And there's been, I think, only 6 or 7 fish caught in that section, and we put Bart on and he's only gone caught in 10 minutes. So absolutely incredible.
It's a distance peg. You needed to get somebody in there that can get that sort of distance to squeeze. It makes sense to find out, to get the how the pegs lie, identify that situation, and that's what you've got him there for, isn't it?
Well, that's it. You know that sometimes in cards you don't play your best hand. I've got a team of lads here. There isn't one individual. We've got 8 guys out here plus our support staff, and we are one unit. And you know, everybody's just doing absolutely brilliantly. So the decision was to put Barth on because he can just chuck that a little bit further. He would have gone in somewhere. We didn't know where it was going to be. But it turned out that was a place that he went in, and he's gone in. Lo and behold, he's gone and nailed one. So that puts that section from third up to first. So at the moment, we've got two firsts in section, and maybe a second or a third, because it depends on what Croatia have caught. We're just literally getting news in a couple of minutes ago that Croatia caught in the same section as Billy and Jamie, which is a bit of a bummer, because they were in front of us, we've just overtaken them, and then they may have just overtaken us back again. But two firsts and a third. Bear in mind, Jamie, that this is a rookie squad. I can't tell you how well it's come together for everybody. They've gelled so well. You know, we've had fun doing it. Make no mistake about that. And a lot of time when I talk to you, we're having a bit of a laugh and a joke about stuff. And you know, I enjoy having a bit of fun. But this is incredibly serious. We're all taking it very, very seriously. and we've stuck rigidly to a plan that we've worked for an awful long time on. The boys have put an awful lot of work into what they've done. My fishing in particular, it's almost been non-existent this year. I've had a couple of outings, but other than that, it's been England, England, England all the way with all the backroom stuff. And it's lovely to see that it's working. I don't think we've ever been in this position before where we've got, you know, and we're only halfway, so there's a long way to go, but I'd rather be here now than at the bottom looking up. But as we speak, there is, we're in gold medal slot, we've got an individual gold, and we've also got the Triple Crown, which is the biggest fish in the tournament at the moment as well. So, you know, it's a wonderful position to be in.
How does the scoring work then? Is it, I know you've told us before, but for people that didn't hear that, is it the three biggest fish?
No. This is an out and out catch as many as you can, but it's a team event, so this is a very, very different event. This is the FIPS International World Championship. So for a start, you know, there's lots of events out there, but this is actually the ratified official one that the International Olympic Committee recognise. So this is the official World Championship. It's run to World Championship rules. They are incredibly strict. The best way that I can describe it is, in England we play rugby union. Our fishing is a rugby union equivalent, and what we have to do is, when we come over here, we have to play rugby league. The ball's the same shape, you've got to get it over a try line, but the way you do it is very, very different. And this is one of the reasons that you know, we I won't say we struggle in England, but we don't fish this very often. So there's an awful lot to know. You speak to any of the float anglers, feeder anglers, they say exactly the same thing. Fishing the world is just completely different to anything else. So the way that it works is there are three sectors, A, B and C. We have a pair in each of those sectors. And if you win your sector, you get 1 point. If you come last in your sector, you get 24 points, because there's 24 teams in it. So a third will get 3 points, a tenth will get 10 points. Now, if anybody's following us on the Team England Facebook page, which I hope you all are, you'll see that they put it up as penalties. And I've had so many mails just saying, what are the penalties? The penalties are basically the points. It's the translation from Italian into English. But it's, that's what you get. So if you finish first in your section, you get 1 point. And the nation that will win will be the individual nation that's got the least points. So at the moment, we're sitting on either 4 or 5 points. I think Croatia now are on 7 points, because they've got two thirds and a first, or a third and two seconds. I don't know, because we're waiting for the next update. Behind them, we've got Romania. I think they're on... behind them is France. They're on 17 points. And behind them is Romania on 27 points. So it's very, very tough out here. I don't know if you're picking up the... excuse me, I'm just going to throw that. Exactly that. You're picking up that my voice is a bit sore. It's just amazing. It's very, very hot. It's in the upper 20s. There's loads and loads of dust around, very, very difficult angling conditions. It was very, very windy. Now it's gone virtually flat calm. It's tough. It is a tough event. The other thing that's interesting is the amount of other teams that watch exactly what you're doing. And obviously the teams that are doing well have a big crowd behind them. And we rocked in a Billy and Jamie swim, and there were 15 other national managers that were there watching exactly what was going on.
Wow.
So they've got cameras out, they video your every move. Sorry, I missed that.
I said they're in there stealing the tactics.
That's exactly what they want to do, yeah. Exactly what they want to do. It's quite funny, because we do let them have the odd snippet of information. When does this go out? That's finished at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Tomorrow,
when does this go out?
Yeah, tomorrow.
All right,
Friday.
Okay. Maybe at the next Carpcast we'll have a wash up. And yeah, I can tell you a few bobs. But yes, we're. I nearly put my foot in it then and told you a few things that are better until late. Not that we're breaking any rules, but there's people down with cameras all the time, so we leave the odd generous tip at them for them just to have a look at. And we know for sure that one team's trotted off and had a bit of a go. It's quite because the French next door to us. They must think everybody's daft. because they sit there in the bivvies not doing anything in front of everybody at all. And lo and behold, as soon as a few people start watching them, they come out and they start spawning. And they spawn random little pockets of formal pellets covered in blue cheese, Maruku powder. You know, that really distinct blue tea smell. And they just scatter these all over the place. When people are watching, they go back in the booth again. And then there's been a couple of missions. I think Kazakhstan was one where they just wrote down exactly what they're doing and scurried off back to their peg. So there's a reasonable amount of blindness going on. But I must say that whilst it's very, very serious, most of the nations are getting on very well together. We're having, you know, me in particular, because I'm out and out on the banks, I'm having a really nice amount of decent, gentlemanly banter with the Croatians and the French. And I've spoken to a couple of the French lads recently just about some of this rubbish that's going on between the English and French. And, you know, we'll use Darwin as a prime example. It's inexcusable. And there's things that the English are doing that are inexcusable and things that the French are doing that are inexcusable. And everybody just needs to calm down and get on with what we love, which is cricket. And it's, you know, it's quite nice to do that with some of these guys, because these are the cream of the competition crop in France. And the head of the FFPC is here. And, you know, we've had a chat about it. And it's nice to have a decent competition with decent competitors that are doing things the right way rather than cheating.
We've got Daryl on later, actually, in the show. Obviously, everybody's seen on Facebook what's happened to him. I mean, are you getting the impression from over there there is a bit of a feud between the English and the French currently, as far as...
Well, this was exactly what I raised with the head of the French Fishing Federation. It's like, come on, mate, you know, what's going on with this? Why is all this going on? And I know what the root cause of it is. And, you know, there's been a bit of... flames fanned by various different things, and you know, Daryl's in a bit of an unfortunate position, because obviously A, he works in the media, B, he's English, and C, he's actually very good and he's catching a few fish. So, you know, it's ridiculous that people can be jealous and can do that sort of thing, and I think we've all just got to thank God that he's all right. It's inexcusable, and you know, the French guys out here, I've spoken to them about it, and even they say it's absolutely pathetic. You know, the genuine people think that this is ridiculous, and they don't want it to escalate into English versus French. You know, there's always a little bit of ill feeling there because of the English lakes, France, and there's allegations of fish nicking and other bits and bobs in the past. So there's a little bit of an edge there, but for it to boil up into this is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. So, you know, anything that we can do by international relations at this end, even though it's a different style of fishing, we'll try to do that to calm everybody down, and the French lads feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, is this the first incident with Daryl that you're aware of? Or has this been kind of coming to a head over the summer?
I think that's a matter that you'll have to discuss with Daryl. I'm here to talk about the carp champs.
Of course. I've still got some inside knowledge with the French guys over there, being as you're very international currently.
So, yeah. Well, you know me. It's quite funny because some of the managers rock up and they want to see exactly what's going on. The first thing I do, they get the cameras out, and I just wander straight up to them, shake their hand, ask them where they're from, what are they doing, is there anything in particular they'd like to see, and would they like a cup of tea? And being a true English gentleman, and they don't know what to do with it, because they're used to everybody hiding things and swearing at them, and I've just gone up, shook their hands, and it's amazing how, you know, a lot of the time they melt away. So they'll stay for a minute, they'll melt away. There's one bloke from Croatia, bless him, he's fortunately found a tree, but he's been pitched up beyond Billy and Jamie since the day before yesterday.
Wow.
they thought he was just like a local hobo who was out to enjoy the scenery, you know, because the spies don't wear any colours. The team have to wear colours, the reserves have to wear colours, and, you know, the spies don't wear any colours, so you can't initially identify exactly what nation they're from. So, you know, it's quite an interesting tactical game going on everywhere, but this period is good. People can get a bit stressed, they're cockiness, they're looking at this, that and the other. You know what, that's part of the game. If we can go out and we can beat them, fair and square, then happy days.
Yeah, it's good to show that the English are still market leaders if everybody's interested in what we're doing.
We need
six extra team members next year, one to stand behind each of the different countries and get our own spies.
Well, it's funny because three guys from the English media came over. I managed to register them as media members, because as a media member, you get access to a little bit more area than others. So the British press have supported us really, really well. So we've got three media members over, in that Wayne Mansford, Ryan Mead and Tom Maker. Those well-known Anglian journalists have come over, they've got the media passes, and they're walking around everywhere, getting as much information as they can do for the British media. So fair dues to them. I've got all the magazines that they write for. Thanks for that. Well done, guys.
So when
there's a few other. Yeah, sorry, go on.
So when does the when does it actually finish? Is it Sunday or Saturday?
No, it finishes on Saturday. Finishes on Saturday. Yeah. So and you know what, these things are always won or lost in the. Oh my word! Sorry, I've just seen them. Good God. Excuse anybody that's religious listening to my blasphemy there, but I've just seen Jamie Londers bang a PVA bag out, and that's put a smile on my face. That's a massive distance. Billy and Jamie are in an area that we practiced on before. I've just seen a Croatian bloke walk off shaking his head.
Well, that is good, because they are big pastors over there.
He's got to go back and give his report in there, because he's obviously been scared to go back and tell what's called on the doors off. And he's going to go back and now say that they've just landed one of the biggest fish in the tournament and cast a PVA bag about 180 yards. So, I can live with him after that news. But like I say, we're all very much feet on the ground here at the moment. It's a wonderful, wonderful position to be in. We're very pleased that the plan is working so far. But you know what? A lot of the time, the match is won in the last 24 hours and we haven't entered that yet. And if some of the others' dating plans come to fruition. Sorry, say again.
I said, but we've got Super Sub in there. I think there's a bit of a delay on the conversation because I don't mean to keep interrupting you, I'm afraid. But we've got Super Sub in there for the last 24 hours, getting the extra distance. We're currently in a very good spot. We've got the Croatians to watch out for by the sound of it. And have the French got a shot? Is there anybody else that's got a legitimate shot?
The Romanians, the Romanians are definitely on it. It's us, the French and the Croatians at the moment. The Croatians have put their foot down and are keeping pace with us. The French have dropped back a little bit, but they had a very good night last night. The Romanians, if they catch one in the section that they haven't caught one, they will be absolutely right back in the mix. I think there's one pair of Romanians that have got a shout at the individual gold medal. But like all these events, when you fish a team event, it's not the best peg that wins you the match, it's the worst section that loses it. So, you know, you could have two firsts and a 20th, it gives you 22 points. So your two firsts are worth nothing if your last man isn't doing very well. Fortunately, our last man at worst is third, at maybe second. We're rocking on two firsts. And, you know, I don't even want to think about it because, you know, I'm a new bloke for this position. I'm absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of support that we've had. I can't thank everybody enough. And, you know, the lads are very aware here of exactly what the people back home are saying and doing and thinking. They've all got Facebook feeds. We've got the Kit Cop Team England. When they get 2 minutes just to check up, they're all having a look. And it literally is like having the crowd behind you. I can't tell you how good it is. It's the 12th man, and it really, really helps.
There is definitely lots of support from over here. I'm seeing lots of people on Facebook with the Carp Team England logo. There's lots of people sharing results. And for the first time ever, and in my sort of 25 years of adult life, I can actually, I feel like I'm in touch with what's going on. You know, I've in the past, I've not even known there's been a world championship until I've seen a couple of pictures in Carp World when people have got back from it, you know, let alone had a chance to support it. So we wish you luck. We hope your last place is third minimum in any of the sections, and we will speak to you next week when you're back, I think.
Brilliant, thanks ever so much, Jay. Well done, as ever, on, you know, it's a pleasure coming on the Carpcast and also listening to it. When I drove down for practice, you and Mark kept me going. It was a long old drive, and it was the Carpcast that really helped getting down. So well done once again, guys listening. Thanks ever so much for your support. I'll say that once again, greatly, greatly appreciated. And you know what, win, lose or draw, whatever happens, you'll hear the full story, and we'll let you know what's going on. So thanks ever so much.
We expect nothing less than a trophy. A nice gold medal. No pressure.
No pressure then. No pressure. Thank you for that. I'll worry about that in another 2 days. Cheers, mate.
No problem. Thanks, take care. Speak soon.
Bye-bye. Bye now.
So we wish him the best of luck. We hope that next time we speak to Rob, when he gets back, that we've won. But we're in a great spot at the minute. We're, I think, 2 out of 3 first play, or 3rd and 2 firsts in the 3 different sections are pretty impressive, I think. So
very impressive. That's just listening to that. It's hairs on back of my neck is standing up.
Yeah, well, let's hope we win. That's all we need. Let's just win. Yeah, you rang me the other day. I'd already heard about this, but Cuttle Mill.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, it's back opened. You know, I don't know exactly when this happened, but it's somewhere where, well, it's a very historic water. It was, if you know your history, it's one of the first ones to be stocked with what were later termed as wrongins. Obviously not back then. Everyone thought it was great.
Yeah, I'd buy PB from there in probably 1983, 84. It was about £17 at the time. Not as big as they did go in there, but it was a big fish to me.
Yeah, it's all relative. Anyway, it was, I fished it a few times, a few winter trips, and it ended up, it was closed to angling in 2013 after a compulsory purchase due to the proposed HS2 rail link going through the edge of the property.
No. Yep, I remember it closing. It has been open for a little while, I think. I remember seeing some stuff in the press saying that time flies when you're as old as me. So things that I think were last month were like 7 months ago sometimes, or longer. But I do remember seeing it, and there's a few people I know have been over there fishing again. That they say it's fishing okay. I don't know if it's got the same stock as it used to have, or if it's been restocked.
I don't know, but what's the important question? Is the calf open?
Yeah, that was one of the best things about that lake. And the draw, because if you drew peg 16, was it the double peg, was it 11 and 12, the pontoon or something, and peg 16 by the house. I only ever got peg 16 once, and it was the only time I ever went for 2 days, because every time I went, I'd only gone for the day, and like quite often, if somebody drew the good pegs, they stayed an extra day. Which meant you could keep the peg for the following day. So twice I went there, all the best pegs were gone from people being there the day before, and I'm like, I'm doing that one time. We went down there for like a 2 day session, me and my mate went over in his van, and we drew peg 16. We were like, yes, we can have it for 2 days. Went out, but we walked miles over a field on after the first night, because you get kicked off on dark, don't you, or you used to. There was no night fishing, get kicked
didn't
out.
They let you bivvy up somewhere in a barn or something?
Yeah, there's a barn and there was a field. He had a big transit van, so we kept in the back of that, but we ended up walking for miles to find some boozer, get something to eat in, and got absolutely steaming drunk, traipsed through a farmer's field on the way back, and collapsed in the van. Just got up in time to make sure we kept our peg, and when we marched up, when everyone was there for the draw, and we were like yeah, we got peg 16 from yesterday. It's like he didn't believe us. He was like, you what? It was kind of like, did you really draw this yesterday? I was like, yeah. He was like, yeah, just convenient that you got 2 days and you drew the best peg. But we did. And we did catch a few fish as well. So
yeah, I remember one winter I was there, I drew peg 3, which you had, like, I'm presuming they're still there, they're like scaffold poles sticking out the water, and those were your swim limits. And whoever's in 16, casting straight up the middle of the lake, caught a couple of fish really quick. Then they wound in and went for the calf. And then the people on the 11 and 12 of the pontoon wound in, cast over into the middle and passed their markers into 16's water. So me and my mate are on 2 and 3. We did exactly the same.
Yeah, I think last time I went there, they used to have actual like sticks and stuff in the water to stop people casting into other people's pegs. It is a very small lake, isn't it? It's not very big, but I always enjoyed my time there. I only went there 4 or 5 times maybe. But I quite enjoyed it. It was like pre-zig fishing days. I remember once the zig craze came out, they used to get hammered, because it's not very deep, is it? It's like, is it what, like four or five foot deep all over?
Yeah.
And they can't really get away from a zig. You put a zig like 3 foot in the water, and it doesn't matter where they are, they're in it. I think there was a lot of foul hookings and stuff, and it kind of ruined it for me a little bit.
Yeah. You mentioned rigs. It's also very silty. Is that one of the places where Frank Warwick first invented his silt rig, which later became the Chod?
I don't know. We can ask him when he comes on. I spoke to Frank a few days ago while we were booking guests, and he was just on his way out to Gran Canaria taking a group of lads fishing on Lake Shearer, which he has been doing quite a bit this year, because he wants to record a carp cast with us and do it on the bank somewhere. So I know Frank likes a drink, and I know he likes a few stories, so I'm quite looking forward to that session.
I've seen his slideshow. He's an entertainer.
Yeah, he's an entertainer, and he loves a story, and he loves a few beers. So we will be fishing with him somewhere over the next few weeks, and we're going to do a few carp casts on the bank, actually. Something else, it's kind of on the net because it was in an email, but I got an email off Kevin Nash last week, basically saying that he just listened to the Mark Holmes podcast and wanted to congratulate us on a great show. And for those of you who didn't know, Kevin was our first ever guest on Carpcast 1, where he didn't really know what we were doing. He just trusted us and said, yeah, I'll help you out. And he probably hasn't listened to many since, and ended up listening to the Mark Holmes one because it was obviously a popular one. A few people said you must check it out, listen to it, and he loves it. He said he's on holiday next week. He's going to download them all to listen while he's away.
Do you feel like you're being judged? It's like the headmaster's got your homework.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you know, Kev's an extremely wise man who's been around long, long time in the industry. So any praise from him is very welcome and gratefully received. So for him to take the time and write us an email basically saying that he really enjoyed it, it was fantastic. And so obviously I took the opportunity to say, well, can we get you back on? Can we come and do a live one? Because Kev also has some fantastic stories. And when you get him one-on-one, I've spent a few times over on Church Lay where he'll come round and sit there with a brew in the afternoons, and you wish you could record the conversations, because some of the stuff, you know, you realise that you know, he is a very clever man who understands a lot of things and thinks on a different level to us mere mortals about lots of things. And I sometimes wish we could have recorded many of them conversations. So I think we should do this more often, is get our guests out on the bank, maybe playing with a couple of beers, and we can have Carpcast Uncut. maybe the new idea. So yeah, so Kev's agreed to do that, so we will get him back on soon, and we might even get a session Stownies Lake. I mean, what better place to do it than go fish on church? So
fingers. Well, the cops.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? But yeah, I don't think he lets anyone on there. So
I think Alan Blair's been having a few out of there this year, hasn't he?
I know Alan's been fishing it. Yeah, he's been allowed to fish it off and on for years, mainly to try and get the ones that have spawned in there. The stockies, the stockies are between 30 and 50 pounds. Well, they're not stockies; they're fish that are bred in the lake, but they seem to be pretty big. But yeah, I think Kev wanted them out to make sure the others keep growing. And I know he's had a fair few this year out of there. So yeah, I doubt we'll be able to fish the cops, but you never know, we might be able to not dropping any hints or anything, Kev, if you're listening to this, but you know, it'd be nice to catch a 50 on on tape.
The ante.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean,
25.
Yeah, it's great that Kev likes it, and I hope it's entertaining for you guys that are listening to us waffle on. Something else I've seen on the net this week is
it's on the net. It must be true.
A1 Pits, up in your neck of the woods, aren't they? They are putting the price up to £20 a day, which caused a bit of controversy on the website. Lots of people saying it's pretty hard up there these days. I will vouch for that, having never caught a fish out there in four night sessions.
You never got out your van. It was just when I seen you down there, it was just after the Northern show. You and Reed, you were absolutely shattered, and you just sat there and went, nah.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time though. That was the thing for me earlier in the year. I mean, I do want to catch some fish now, but earlier in the year, I just wanted to be out and relaxing because I was pretty exhausted from everything else.
Yeah, I do have to correct you slightly though, because it's gone from £15 for 24 hours to £20 for 24 hours. And let's look at day ticket prices, just at a few random other places. Cromwell, just up the road, it starts at 30 for 24 hours. Admittedly, there is bigger fish and more amenities.
But yeah, you're looking at 60, 70, 30s and half a dozen 40s. But I mean, if we're going to compare it to other lakes, then have a look at somewhere like Christchurch. Christchurch, I mean, there's 20 40s in there at the minute, and that's not including the 39s and 38s that could be 40 now. There's 20 known 40s in there, and it's 25 quid a night or for 24 hours. You know, it's the fact that there is 30s in every lake on the A1 pit, but there certainly isn't more than half a dozen to 10.
They're not widespread. And again, I have heard over the last few weeks, while I've been on holiday, it has been fishing hard. But then the weather's been crap. Pressure's been through the roof. Bright days, cold nights, no winds to speak of, and a big wind really does turn the pits on.
Yeah, they always fished well in the winds on there, from what I remember. But just reading the Facebook group, which is a pretty active group on there, it just doesn't seem to be the lake it was. People are saying, if you're putting it on, we don't mind paying more if you restock it, because I know they did have a lot of floods a few years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and all of a sudden pit 5 was full of singles.
Yeah, I mean, the fact it was 15 quid, you know, you could go there for 3 nights for 45 quid and park by the lake and all that. I mean, that is what made me do the 2.5 hour drive from Blackpool. All of a sudden, when it goes to 20 quid and a 2.5 hour drive for us, I'm going to thinking, well, for the extra fiver, what kind of stock can I have elsewhere? You know, the likes of Christchurch. I don't know. I mean, it has been 15 quid for years. I kind of see the point. 15 quid does seem cheap, but it's also for the fish that you're going to catch, it's probably quite fair.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad price, to be honest, and I still happily pay it. I'm not a regular down there. I think I've had one or two trips early this year, but that's me every year on there. But I enjoy it down there, and I still think it's quite reasonable. There's plenty of room to move around. There's different lakes. You can take your pick, easier ones to 5, which is tricky, and 6, which is big.
Yeah, 6 seems to be the hard one. I think that pit 5 seems to be the pit of choice for sort of, you know, actual chance of catching and you know, chance of catching a 30 or whatever, or upper 20s. But I wouldn't know, because I've not caught any. I only done one night on pit 5. We did the rest of the time pit 6. And to be fair, there wasn't a fish caught while we were there on any of the lakes any night that I fished it. So it was earlier in the spring. Straight after the last show, wasn't it, in March? The reason we mentioned it is because people have kind of spoke out on the net, and nobody particularly liked it. And I kind of agree.
I think it's, someone said it was like first time the price has been raised for like 5 years. And to be honest, I think it will be as busy next year as it has been this year with the extra price. People will have an initial whinge and then forget about it and keep going, because that's what they do.
That's the same with everything, to be fair. I mean, to be fair, if you just go camping somewhere without a lake, it's going to cost you, what, 7-8 quid a night? Maybe a tenner? To actually just go and pick your pitch a tent or a caravan anywhere just for the bit of space. So I mean, I liked it at 15 quid. It did make me drive that distance. You know, it was the price alone that made me think this is value to drive 2.5 hours. It's now not value. I can see myself driving 2.5 hours in a different direction and paying the extra fiver a night for some, you know, significantly better stock lakes. That's my personal opinion, obviously.
I have to see what, if they are doing anything with the extra revenue they'll get, whether there is any stocking plans. Just keep an eye on their Facebook pages, because I know one of the Baileys posts on there, and they'll keep you informed.
Yep. Anything else you've seen on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I've seen a little video, which is Lewis Putter from Fox saying their Impact Spod will be out before the end of the year.
Yeah, I've been waiting for these. I've definitely been waiting for these. I mean, we know how good the SPOM is. We love using the SPOM, and Fox look like they've improved it. I saw them at our last show. They wouldn't let me steal the one that they had.
They actually had it tied down, didn't they?
Yeah, I've been dying to lay my hands on it. It's so frustrating with the fishing industry when you see the stuff. We're in new product launch time now, aren't we? There's trade shows going on.
Yeah.
Tackle and Gun show is on this coming weekend, where basically all tackle companies go around and launch their new products for next year. But quite often they'll tease you with something, and then it's certain things, it's a year later when they actually come out, and it's so frustrating. They obviously show them now with the intention of having them out for next spring. Like I say, they've made us wait for these SPOMs, haven't they? Or impact spots, as they call them.
Yeah. I just want one. I want three or four because I'll crack them off first cast.
Well, we are going to introduce a real review feature. Now, we're not sure how this feature is going to work, mainly because we're going to give an honest interpretation. The way the trade works currently is the majority of quote reviews that appear in the press are generally advertorials. So there's an advertising fee paid basically for the review. It's just kind of how it is, how it's always been, which is why you'll never see a bad review about anything. So we intend on doing a real review. So I kind of don't know if this is going to work, because who wants to send us an item of tackle to review that we're going to slag off? But we aren't going to slag it off if it's not bad.
I want to say slag off. The way I envision doing these things is like along the lines of, Top Gear would review a car, tell you all about it, give you the pros and cons, their opinion, then make your own mind up.
Yeah, that's how a review should be, I think. It should be honest. And we are in a position to do an honest review. I've kind of always said this. I've always said it may get you less money off advertisers, but would probably sell more magazines if you did kind of real reviews in magazines. So we're going to try it. If anybody wants to have us, any manufacturers out there, or you sell any products and you would like us to give an honest appraisal of anything, then get in touch.
Yeah, if anyone from Fox wants me to review an impact spot.
Yeah, maybe 20 of them at the rate you crack off.
If you've been watching what I do in a bivvy at night. Edit that one out.
we're going to review stuff, so if you'd like something reviewing, then by all means get in touch, and we will have a look at that. And we will be truthful. So if it's great, something we've spoke about many times on here, and I cannot give enough of a good review of the Ridge Monkeys. Have you seen the stuff that's been? We could have a section on new things to cook in a Ridge Monkey like every week. I think.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Diablo, but to be honest, it's been relegated to my crumpets in the morning just because it's round. But I'm gonna have to get a Ridge Monkey.
Have you not got one?
No.
Oh my days, what have I seen this week? I saw one guy, he made pie and chips, so he
pie and chips,
he heated the pie up in it. Yeah. and he actually fried chips in it. I mean, I use it for everything that I fry, so I do my breakfast stuff. It's the perfect size for making your own breakfast butties, so you can get four sausages, brown them, because obviously it cooks both sides, you just keep spinning it over. So they're the perfect length to get the Richmond sausages in. So you get like four of them in, like cook them in like half the time you would take normally, because you don't need to actually keep turning them over, because you can just shake the Ridge Monkey. They're also, you squeeze it closed and you can just pour the oil out. You know how much fat comes out of sausages, and then you bang the bacon in it.
Especially Richmond's.
Yeah, especially Richmond's. Yeah, you can fill a pan with the fat that comes out of them. But they're just perfect for everything. But yeah, some of the stuff I sort of saw one guy do. A paella in it. They're really good for like wrapping stuff as well. So I've seen people do like breakfast sandwiches where they'll get like a hash brown and they wrap bacon around the hash brown, bang that in them. Oh, there's so much. They need to do a bigger one. I'm sure I might have seen a picture somewhere actually of a bigger one. I don't know if they haven't done it, they should do. I might have dreamt it. I can't remember, but yeah, we could do a feature on the stuff that I've seen cooked in them at the minute. There's a Ridge Monkey page group on Facebook that's just dedicated to different stuff that people cook in them.
When we finish recording, I'm going to look that up. I'm salivating now.
For me, they are the most beneficial new item of equipment to come out in fishing since the bite alarm. The next big one was the SPOM. The next big one after that is the Ridge Monkey, I think. The crusher was a pretty decent one, wasn't it, where you could grind the boilies up, although we had our own crusher before that, didn't we, with the ice crushers. But crusher was a pretty impacty type product.
That's one thing I'm surprised no one's gone down the ice crusher route of it, because you've got obviously the crushers, then you've got your Coda choppers, you know, the cut boilers in half.
Yeah.
The Coda cutter, sorry.
Yeah.
And I've still got the same ice crusher that I bought at the sea, because I bought you one, myself one, my mate Adrian one.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, all three are still going.
Yeah, £7 a pop from Iceland, weren't they? They were fantastic.
IKEA.
IKEA, yeah, not Iceland. They were good. I've got the top bit for mine. I've sure seen the bottom bit knocking about somewhere. But for doing, like, so let's say you wanted to crush a bucket of boilies, the twisty crusher grinder things are just going to take forever and your arms are going to be killing. But if, you know, you could be constantly turning the handle on the ice machines while somebody else is dropping the boilies in, you could probably do a bucket of bait in no time.
Yeah, I think if any company out there does want to do one, they can get in contact. We can discuss a consultant's fee.
Send us your equipment. Send us loads of impact spots. And if you've got any new stuff that you've cooked in a Ridge Monkey that we've not seen, then let us know as well. Facebook us. Something else that's been on the net is Daryl Peck, along with some other people, have been on the Orient in France, a place I've driven past a couple of times, never actually fished, and it looks like they've been catching. I've seen him a number of 50 pounders that
they've been on fire, literally.
They've been absolutely on fire. And here is Daryl to tell the story.
Oi, oi, geezer.
How's it going?
Not too bad, are you?
Yeah, all right, mate. All right, just fucking bumming on my sofa, getting used to normal life again.
How long have you been out there?
Nearly 6 weeks.
Wow. You're always known for a long session, but 6 weeks is a big one, isn't it?
That's the biggest ever, mate, yeah.
Is it? Is that a PB?
Yeah, that's a PB, mate. A fucking 6 weeker on the bank. It's too long, really. It fucks you up. Like, I've lost 25 pounds since I left home.
Wow. Maybe I should do it. I'm probably 2 stone heavier than when you last saw me. 6 weeks on the bank, eh? Wow. So, if you don't mind me asking you a few questions, I'm obviously recording this for the Carpcast. It seems like you've had a little bit of drama over there.
Right.
Tell us about the start of it. I mean, this is the time of year to go to the Orient, isn't it? Because is that just because of the water levels and stuff?
Not historically, that is sort of what people would say, you know, that as the water level reduces, the fish are unable to get into the trees and stuff around the edges of the bank, and obviously they become more concentrated, and obviously heading for deep water, which theoretically should make it easier.
Yeah. It looked pretty muddy, so is it obviously where you were bivvied up and everything. I've seen all the pictures. That's just normally water, isn't it? And it just leaves, like, just mud flats, does it?
Yeah, you're obviously fishing on the exposed lake bed, which is obviously prone to drying, depending on the weather, and then obviously getting exceptionally muddy as soon as it rains, and it doesn't take a lot to bring a lake bed back into a swamp, you know, even if it has been dried for a week or more, you know, a couple of days of rain, and you're up to your knees in it.
Right. And what do we know about the stock of the Orient these days? Is it still fairly unknown? I mean, is there that possibility of catching an unknown 70, like, every time you go?
Well, the possibilities are endless on a lake like that, you know, no matter how much experience any angler and how much time that they ever fished there, you know, it's an uncompletable subject. It's just that what could be in there, what is in there, is absolutely limitless, you know. It's not like a run water by any stretch of the imagination, but there's every potential for an unknown 70 to come out on any day of any given week. You know, they're in there. I've got no doubt about that. There's probably thousands of carp in there. Who knows? You know, they just don't get caught with any regularity to really find out exactly what's in there.
Ah, that's ace. That really sounds like true pioneering. Like that's what I wanted to hear. That yeah, it could be anything in there. Could be maybe in an 80, a 90. The fact that it's so big that you just couldn't ever know.
That's sort of what I've
about forever.
That's what I sort of craved from my angling for a little while, you know. Once you've targeted carp in the UK, Pacific individual fish, you know, it all seems like you're going over the same ground continuously. Although obviously you move from one water to the next and you're fishing for a known quantity like 99% of the time in the UK. And I can just fancy something after Belgium and that last year. Just fancy going somewhere where I don't know what's in there. I don't know what's in there at all. I know there's the fish of my dreams, of my imagination, of a lifetime swimming around out there. And not just one of them, hundreds of them. And it's not about an individual thing. It's more about tackling a lake that's harder than anything you've ever done before, taking yourself out of a comfort zone, taking yourself away from everything that you know, and going back to that sort of childish sort of trying to step up the ladder and take on something that's bigger than you've done before.
Yeah, that's always been what's excited me over the years. I've found it very hard to get motivated for UK fishing in recent years. And the odd lakes that I have fished have been, you know, like the ones that that either you're not allowed to fish or that nobody really knows what's in there. Last 2 years I've been fishing a lake that's similar, that's never been done really. I've had nothing bigger than 12 pound out of there yet. it's you know, there could be a record in there, there could be nothing in there, but it's just had the rumours for 25 years. And like, I've only just discovered really the foreign fishing. I hadn't gone abroad much, probably similar to you, because you were hammering all the UK circuit lakes and, you know, hammered them extremely well. You know, you caught pretty much everything, didn't you?
Not everything, but I've caught most of what I've tried to catch, and otherwise if I haven't, it's usually died.
Yeah, you can't catch them when they're dead. It's a bit tough even for you, that one. But, you know, I've started looking at these places. Obviously, the Cord lads went to Balaton, didn't they, which is somewhere that's kind of on my radar as maybe similar to the Orient. And I've driven past the Orient a couple of times going through France, and I've stopped and looked at it, you know, the Forest or the Orient, and I'm just like, wow. But I just didn't know anything about it, you know, other than the bulldozer from years ago. Was it the bulldozer, the big one in there, a long, long time ago?
Yeah, I think at the time it was probably a world record, that fish, and if that's probably not exactly right, but I remember that the lake had only been there something stupid like 11 or 12 years, and it had already produced a world record carp, which just shows you how quickly and the richness of what that lake can do to carp. You know, it's a very, very special environment, you know. You've got snails are littering the lake beds. Like when the water goes down, it's, you can't move around crunching a snail or a crayfish or anything like that. You know, there's more food than any fish could ever need in there, and it's just the ultimate environment for a carp to grow, I'd say.
And I saw a picture of you with a 50 pounder. I mean, what have you caught this time?
Well, I've done a massive length to start with. Like I say, I was there almost 6 weeks, and I caught one in the first month, and I caught that fishing from the boat, basically. I spent a couple of weeks blanking, fishing from the bank, and then a French kid, a young lad, he couldn't have been much older than 18 or 20 years old, done a couple of days in the boat and caught a couple of big ones, like fishing well away from the permitted night zones. And I went and done that myself, caught one first day doing it, but then the weather sort of changed and it all got a bit too early out there really to be fishing from a boat as such. You know, it doesn't take a big wind to make it sort of, yeah, too inhospitable to be out there in a boat. But in the end, the last sort of 10 days, I caught 15, I think, in the last 10 days. and a 62 common, which was the biggest, and four other 50s, including two 57s.
Wow, that's a pretty impressive tally of fish to finish up with. So, did you catch from the same place that you blanked for the first month?
No, so I've done a couple of nights in Bibby City, like initially when I first got there, because I got there at the end of August, which is way too early, really. But I've done a couple of nights around there, what, maybe three or four. And then I moved to an island, fished off there for sort of three or four days, just from the strength that it was central and I'd heard it was a good area rather than seeing anything. And then around that sort of time was when that kid had caught. And then so we had a little go on the boat. And then move to the nearest swim, obviously, because obviously there's only certain areas where you're permitted to night fish. I was set up in the nearest night zone to this area where the bites had come from. And Paul Ford joined me on that session. And I remember we'd been there a couple of days and the wind turned. And we fished from the bank because it was too windy to be out in the boat. And the wind just slammed in. We had a big rod set each. One got done by 10 each. So then by 11 o'clock at night, we're fishing with one rod in the water each on that sort of lake. And he was still confident we're going to catch one, we're going to catch one, and his rod bust off, and he was like, that's a carp, that one, we're out there in the boat, and it was, yeah, pretty hectic, but the fish he pulled up, man, what a carp, it was like 60 pounds an ounce, he's nearer, and it was covered in scales, probably one of the original stock from the early days.
Wow. And then you just kept feeding it and got them going, and ended up...
Well, completely different to that. Like Paul left and I followed him in behind and obviously fished to the area where he fished, and I went sort of another probably 10 days fishing that zone and I caught tench on every single rod every single night, and occasionally a big roach. And it sort of dawned on me after a while that the situation that Paul was in was different to the one that I was in. You know, the wind came in that particular night when he was there, it blew southeast and straight into the peg, which brought the fish short to the bank. And after sort of 10 days sitting there thinking about it, it all became obvious that I just needed to go a little bit further out. And that's what I did. I basically found that everybody there is fishing to the bottom of the marginal shelf on the back of the weed. Basically, the weed grows until a certain depth of water. Once you get out to 28 feet of water, the weed stops growing because the light doesn't penetrate far enough. And everybody is just fishing in the back of the weed. And nobody was catching anything doing that. So I went out a little bit further and I found like a, what I would call like an oasis in the desert, you know, like this massive plateau, probably like a 100-metre plateau that came out of sort of 45 feet at the back of it, 35 feet at the front of it, up until like 20 foot on top with a little bit of weed on it. And it was just like, yeah, the mother spot as such, put a bit of bait on it. First night I put a rod on it, had a bite, and then it was just a simple case of processing, you know, getting the rod back on the spot, which is a lot more traumatic than casting out, trust me, when you're fishing at the distances which were involved. And yeah, it was pretty straightforward from that point.
So what sort of range was that? You're looking like emptying your reel type range.
Well, as let's just put it like this, there's a 150 metre limit on how far you're supposed to be towing out your rigs, and if you tow out 150 metres, you'll be in about 10 foot of water, and if you're in 10 foot of water, you're in 8 foot of weed. So yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Okay, so who controls, like, it seems like there's quite a few rules for a bit of an open lake, like is it just the local government, council, whatever, that bylaws, or
it's a local park, like, you know, it's like a local council run thing, and it's meant to be there for everyone. You know, I had a windsurfer go through my line, I had a sailing boat go through my line, I've had piking just pick me up. But that is basically the guard de pêche in that area are controlling three lakes, and they're not sort of on site daily, you know, they're only there when called to a complaint as such. And the pike anglers are not allowed within 150 metres of the bank. Carp anglers are not supposed to go out further than 150 metres of the bank. So obviously when a pike angler picks up your line, you should need to be as friendly as possible, you know, not to cause too much of a scene. If you get the wrong pike angler pick up your line and he makes the call to the guard de pêche, then next thing you know, you've got an armed man standing in your swim asking you how far out you're fishing.
Wow.
And yeah, one particular Saturday, I've been basically you want to try and keep everything as minimal as possible. You don't want to cause anyone any offence, you know, and cause bring as little attention to yourself as possible. And I was winding in most days. But one particular Saturday, I left my rig out there because I re-put it out there after having a fish at 3 a.m, got picked up by a pike angler, and even like, I waved at him. I got the impression that he wasn't very happy, and because of that, I decided to wind in. Like that morning, I'd had a 62 and a 57 common in the sack, and so I called for photo assistance and wound in. Literally took the photos of the fish, gone, and I had a wheelbarrow full of leisure batteries, took them back to the car, and got met by the guard de pêche halfway down the bank as I'm going back to the car. And he said, "Are your lines in the water?" And I said, "He said, what about that? Like, and he thinks he's got me red-handed." And he gets your binoculars out, looks back at me swim, and I said, "No, they're not in the water," and which was just a turn of luck, you know, it's one of those situations. I sensed the danger after being picked up by the pike angler, and luckily the reaction was the correct one.
Was that the pike angler took a picture from the water and put it on Facebook that went round?
I've not seen it, to be fair. I didn't know anything about that. What picture was that?
So basically, a guy with a foreign name, French, clearly, has put a picture from... He didn't look like he was 150 metres out. He looked closer in than that, to be honest. He took a picture of your swim. I don't know what part of the state it was. It was the muddy-looking area. It looked a bit like a beach from the water. It looks quite nice from the water. And then when you see the close-ups, obviously it's a mess. Yeah. But yeah, he put a picture and wrote something in French. The way it was translated on Facebook said that they're not breaking rules, but the way the post was written looked like it was saying something different. Mark Holmes shared the picture because I think he presumed Paul Forward was in the peg, and obviously he's had a do with Paul Forward recently.
Childish, it's so childish, isn't it? It's like absolutely ridiculous. It's like the playground stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, fishing brings out the best and the worst in people sometimes. So we kind of dealt with all that on a different show. Mark's very vocal, isn't he? About he's always been very vocal. I don't know, Paul. I did read what Paul kind of posted. If you're going to call somebody what do you call him? I can't remember, but it was a swear word anyway. If you're going to do that in public, you're going to get some sort of backlash. So,
yeah,
you know, that kind of is. But anyway, that situation's happened, and he shared this picture, obviously presuming on the guilty side, and then the picture got deleted. So I've not seen it since. But it was a French pike angler that had put the picture in, and he didn't look 150 yards out to me. But obviously, it's hard to tell.
It's one of those things, you know, like it's. We pay more than them to fish lake, and realistically, this is like, in all honesty, if you're fishing 150 metres in the autumn, it's not like just in my swim, in every swim on the lake, you know, the weed is 8 foot deep off the bottom, until, or even higher than that, until you get out into 28 feet of water, which when I arrived at the lake, it was 400 metres. Obviously, that reduced as the water level went down, so... Effectively, they're selling you tickets for an impossible angling situation, you know. So the real, you know, I don't want to stand here and say that you need to break the rules to go fishing and that everyone should be doing that. What I'm saying is that the pike anglers, they are allowed to day fish and they can go within 150 metres of the bank. And if you are going to fish further than that, then you need to make sure that your lines are out of the water during the day so that you're not having any conflict, you know. And I just basically got a bit blasé, in the end, and I got picked up by a pike angler, and he dropped my line. You know, he untangled it from his lure, let it go, and that was the end of it. But he obviously wasn't satisfied with that, you know. And well, he obviously felt the need to call the guard de pêche, and they come round to me to catch me red-handed. But I smelt it a mile off, and you know, I caught a night, but not last night, and I was well ready for that.
So while we're talking about the conflict, do you have any conflict at all with the French anglers? Do they mind the English being there? Is there a bit of animosity? Or
I didn't have any problem with anybody, to be honest. No French anglers came into my swim really, other than the young lad that caught a couple. And there's been obviously massive speculation on social media that it was jealous French anglers. You know, I've got absolutely no proof of that whatsoever. And to my mind, it's 50-50 whether it's just it's 5 o'clock in the morning, because when the cars were set fire to, I'll tell you the story. I've gone out there at 5 o'clock in the morning to retrieve a rig from the lake to make sure that I'm not cast out when the piping has come out around 6-7 in the morning. And when I've gone out into the lake to retrieve the rig, I'm snagged up out in the lake, sort of halfway between where I've dropped it and where the line's in the water from the bank. And I can't break it from my position out in the boat, so I put the motor on full bore, pulled away from the snag, and I can feel the braid soaring into something like a sort of clutchy sort of feeling, but without the clutch going round, like as I'm moving the boat. And all of a sudden there was a big snap, like the line had broke, but it hadn't. A big branch come up to the surface, like the size of your arm, and the braid had cut through it, and I untangled that, like unlassoed it off the line, and there's a 50 pounder on the end, boring away. And when I'm playing that in, I've heard an explosion behind me, and I've looked over my shoulder, and there's like fireballs shooting into the sky behind me. And I'm thinking, that's where I'm parked. And I'm thinking, it's probably not my car, you know, it's probably a joyrider to hit the car and set fire to it into the same car park. But at the same time, there's probably like 8 to 12 explosions. I'm thinking, that's a lot of tyres, that's a lot of engines, that's a lot of fuel tanks. And so I got back to the bank with the fish, and I've gone round to Gary from Tracker and said, mate, I think the car's on fire, look. And he's like, dead to the world, man, like absolutely comatose, can't get any response out of him. I was like, well, what am I going to do about it? If my car's on fire, I'm going to sleep. Like, so I put the fish in the bag, gone to sleep. And the next thing you know, I've heard like French voices behind my bivvy, which I assume was Gary and his mate John having a bit of a giggle first morning in France. So I pulled my head out of the bivvy, and it's two gendarmes, you know, police officers. And he said to me, have you got a VW van? I was like, yeah. And he said, it's gone. I was like, what do you mean it's gone? He said, it's kaput. Like, you know, it's gone. To be honest, I already had an inkling, but you know what am I going to do? I'm going to go around there and look at it. What the hell, you know? I'm just going to go. So, woke up with them there. They come and picked us up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, dragged us down the cock shop where we filed our little report to get our, what's it called, little police report for the insurance and whatnot. Gary was all right. He got collected because... obviously he had his passport, but my passport was in the van and that had gone up, so I needed like evacuating from the lake from the guys at Gigantica. Then I needed a lift to Paris the following day to get a new passport, like a short-term passport for one day. And I don't know if you've ever been to Paris, but driving in central Paris is absolutely off the scale, man. It was probably the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
That inner periphery, they call it, isn't it? There's the inner one and the outer one. If you ever go on the inner one by accident when you're trying to go around Paris, that's a day gone.
It was a whole day in there, and obviously they got that sorted, and then Corda, thank God, sent someone to Calais to collect me. So managed to get all my stuff home last night about 8 o'clock.
Wow, that must have been like I say, it's the being stuck in a foreign country with no vehicle. I mean, I had a car years ago, an old Audi, that was set fire to on a lake in Manchester. Only gone like social fishing with my pals for a night, and it was a notorious area. It's not like it hadn't happened there before, but same kind of feeling. You see flames and explosions and popping, you know, shooting up into the air. You're just like, oh, I hope that's not my car.
it was flat calm as well. It was absolutely flat calm. I've got a rod like absolutely hooped over a fish board and I'm watching fireballs popping out of this car park thinking, I hope that's not mine, you know, because I was due to go in a couple of days anyway. It was quite a mental experience, you know. But to be honest, you know, the whole point, I wanted to go to the Orient, but as back in the day when I was sort of 14, 15, I read an article by Hutchie, and he went out there with Richard Seal, and they went for a month, and it was quite like a real good story. I could almost repeat it word for word, and one of the little incidents was hatchet filling fell out, and he stuck it back in and had to go to hospital because he ended up with a gun boil. But I'm starting to think that my story is going to top that quite considerably.
You've got a good one. Did you not know there was a fish on? Were you just getting the rod back in?
But what had happened when I'd gone out there, I caught a fish at sort of about half past midnight. And when I get the fish, you put it into a retention thing and replace the rod before you come back to the bank, because I've got fresh rigs and that in the boat, so that you haven't got to make two journeys in the boat. And halfway back to the swim, the GPS system and the satellite navigation system on the Echo Sound that I've got, the battery died. So all of a sudden, I'm halfway back to the bank, the battery's died, and I forgot to turn a torch on in the swim, so I'm coming back like hundreds of metres completely blind in the dark. Which means you don't get a very good line lay, and obviously not having a very good line lay resulted in me not getting any indication. When I just went out there, the £50 is hanging on the end.
it sounded like you'd really got amongst them in that area. Do you think if you had another week or two in that area, you'd have had a fair few more?
This might sound a little bit arrogant, but if I'd stayed to the end of the season, which is like the standard what people do, you know, to get there mid-September and stay to the end, if I'd have stayed for that last month, I'd have absolutely filled up an album of Carp of a Lifetime. I've got no doubt about that. It was by the end of it, it was one a chuck, and it was quick. You know, I was going out there, dropping 10 o'clock at night, and it was going within an hour. They were queuing up to have their photos taken in the end.
Wow. And I mean, it sounds like you'll probably end up going to the Orient every autumn for the next few years now, because I fancy it myself. But
yeah, no, it's the thing is, there's carp in there that you'll never imagine. You know, if someone said to you there's 1,050 pounders in there, that could be true. If someone said there's 2,000, it could be true. Nobody has got an idea with any accuracy, and there's. You can catch a £70 that no one's ever caught before. There's every potential. But to be fair, after doing Belgium last year and doing the Orient this year, I fancy going. It's just nice to go somewhere fresh, one-off, big-off, big-ass session, not a big long one. Give it a good go, and just keep things fresh. And maybe I'll have another go at the Orient. Don't get me wrong, but realistically, I can tell in a nutshell, if you want to understand what the Orient's about, you've got areas of night fishing zones and areas of non-night fishing zones. And unless you're fishing from a boat miles from the night fishing zones, then you haven't really got a realistic chance, unless you fish exceptionally long range from the bank. So if you go into the Orient and you're going to fish from the night zones, you're going to be fishing longer than you should be, which means you're going to be encountering trouble with pike anglers. You're going to have to keep doing rods every day and all that sort of malarkey. So if I was ever to go back, I would go back and fish it from a boat.
Right.
That is the only way.
You've seen those... Are you allowed to fish from the boat?
Not at night.
Right, got it. Got you. So it's just a constant cat and mouse game. You can't really just do what you want to do when you want to do it, type thing.
No. You know, if you could sit there in a boat out off in the night fishing zone to fish at night, you would be catching 10 fish in a night. You know, because you haven't got to tow out hundreds of meters. The processing time would be a lot quicker. You'd be fishing at catapult range and you'd be catching them and just getting more and getting the spot rocking. Whereas when you're fishing at hundreds and hundreds of meters, it can take 20 minutes to get out there, let alone to get back. So if you've got a 40 minute round trip to drop a rig, you know, you're not going to catch that many in the course of a night, are you?
Yeah.
And I had the situation where you've got a fish, you've gone out playing in a fish, you get back to the bank and you've had another take on one of your other rods, you know, and you've not known anything about it because you've been it's like, oh shit, you know, and then you're back out there going, right, after another one. So it's when you're on them on a lake like that, you don't need to be using fancy rigs or anything like that. Just they're on it, they're eating it. But they're clever enough to know that when you've got four laser lines coming out from each angler in the night zones, and the night zones are crowded with anglers, the carp just don't come in those zones, especially when it's like if you times 100 acre lake by 10 and say like 100 yards, it's like 10 yards on there. Yeah. Because if you have to fish a 400 metres to get to the bottom of the shelf, do you know what I mean? It's a completely different ball game. And the lake goes on for like 1,200 metres beyond where the night zones stop. So if you're fishing at 400 metres, you've still got 800 metres of water behind where the whole lake's population could potentially live, feed, and never encounter a rig.
Yeah. Have you seen those bivy boats, the big aluminium things that come from Holland that you can live on?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, there's a friend of mine, he bought one last year, David Abbott, and he runs Carp Pirate Adventures. He's based right down in the south, I think, of France. But yeah, he's got one of those that he's been doing the rivers and stuff with, but they're pretty, anchor them up, you can pretty much live on it anywhere, you know, there's a cooker on them and everything. That sounds absolutely perfect for there.
It would make your life completely, if you imagine when I want to move swim on a lake like that, my bivvy's 50 metres from the water's edge, and I've got to ferry my gear down to the boat to move swim, so then it might take me half a day to get all of my camp gear, because I'm there for a month or 6 weeks or whatever, and get it down to the water's edge and move, and then you've got to do the whole thing again to set up. If you've got a boat and you're allowed to night fish from it, you can turn up with everything loaded onto your boat, go to one of the slipways, reverse your trailer into the lake, pop the boat off, go and fish for 2 nights, and you'll probably catch more than the guy that's fished for a month. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you've done it without having to trek through the mud, live in the mud, and live like an absolute scumbag. Like I say, I've lost 25 pounds. Which is...
That's unreal. Yeah.
That's unreal.
Was it 14 pounds in the stone? So it's like nearly 2 stone.
It's just over 7.5, isn't it?
That was it, yeah. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty serious. What are the facilities and stuff like in the area? I saw the pictures with the ridge monkey and stuff in the mud. You were eating pretty normal, were you?
I lived on French stick sandwiches or cheese and ham toasties that I was obviously doing in the Ridge Monkey. But I had Gigantica half an hour down the road, which luckily I've got the sort of use of being that I work for Corda, and I can nip back there for a shower every few days, charging batteries. You know, because a lot of people do it even more hardcore than I did. You know, a lot of people row their rods out and then use the engine to come back and like save battery power, whereas at one point I had 9 big leisure batteries on the go, you know, and I had 3 on the charge of Gigantica. That's probably why I lost all the weight, because I was, where I was on this point, I was like a mile from the car park, and I was having to walk these batteries that are like 26 kilos, which doesn't sound that heavy, but put one on your shoulder and then have to walk through ankle deep mud all the way back up a beach, back to your car, and I was doing that quite regularly, ferrying these batteries back. So I'm guessing that's probably got something to do with the weight loss as well as the lack of eating, isn't it?
Yeah, I've done a fair bit of boat fishing over the years, and those batteries, they're not easy to carry either, are they? Whether they go on your shoulder or your neck, your hands up.
Yeah, they've got to go on your shoulder, man.
Yeah, you fished Fendrayton for a bit as well, didn't you? I mean, back then, you had to keep your boat in the boat park, which was like at the furthest corner of the lake from where you park. And then you had to basically carry your motor and your battery all the way around there. So if you left your boat, you know, if you had a hard boat and left it on the lake, then you literally had to walk from one corner of Fen to the other corner of Fen with your motor and with the battery. And, yeah, it's not easy when you got to go that far with a battery on your shoulder. But there's something about the boat fishing, isn't there? Getting out there with the echo sounder, finding spots. It's, I don't know, it's my favourite type of fishing, I think.
I've never done it before, you know. I went there completely naive, and I went on my own boat to get, you know, I didn't go with like an experienced boat angler or anything like that. But that was all part of the adventure as such, is like throwing yourself in at the deep end. You know, it's all this going to a 10-acre pond with one up a 40 in it or a potential 50 in it. I've done that for 10 years now. And it's almost like par for the course. It's like it's just going over the same ground and going over the same ground. I'm not saying I don't enjoy it, but I don't know, there's something about throwing yourself into deep water when you can't really swim and having to swim, you know, and finding the way, you know, because you have to, that really sort of, that I just longed for back in my fishing. And you'll never jump in any deeper water than jumping in at the Orient, I can tell you that for nothing.
So that was like pretty much your first boat lake, was it?
Yeah, See, when I fish fen Drayton, I didn't use a boat. I fish fen Drayton, I just slash single hook baits at jumping fish, and luckily my timing was incredible. And I think, I don't know how much I've done, but I've only done about 13 or 14 nights on there, and I caught most of the ones that you would want to catch, you know. We got very, very lucky. But yeah, the boat fishing on fen Drayton was something that I planned to do, but it just never materialised. I went on there in the spring, casting hook baits, and it was all over before I knew it.
Yeah, what did you have out there? You had the client, didn't you, which was obviously the big one at the time.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact, I think it was 11. I had 11 fish in 13 nights or something stupid like that.
wow.
Yeah, I had the tadpole. I had like quite a few like big 30s. What's that one, Nemo? I had Nemo. A few, some really nice fish, you know, there was an incredible stock in there. And when I say I got my timing right, it wasn't just, like, there was no weed in there that year. I arrived on the day of the first fish of the year coming up, I fished there for 5 weeks, and on the fifth week, they all swam out of there. It's lake flooded, and 90% of the stock, I'm pretty certain, swam out of the lake. And it's been a crash ever since. So, you know, I turned up for possibly the 5 best weeks in Ben Drayton's history. In the history of the lake, wanged out some pink pop-ups and left like a hero. And I didn't do anything special. I just cast out pop-ups at jumping carp, you know, which isn't rocket science, is it?
I mean, you've obviously earned it by being an exceptionally good angler, but your time has been pretty good consistently for about the 15 years I've known you, I think.
Timing is everything, you know. Timing can be a substitute for skill in so many sports, and if you get it there at the right time and you've got your bits in the right spots, then carp fishing is a very simple game at certain times.
It does seem to be for you, but I don't think that's coincidence, because it keeps staying simple for you. So you do the graft in between, I think. But I mean, yeah. Going back to Yateley, I mean, you went on Yateley kind of at a time where, you know, your natural way of fishing was the big 20 millers straight out the bag and stuff, and they'd had no bait for years because everybody was shaving down tiger nuts and putting 10 grains of corn in a bait bowl. And, you know, just what you did was what the lake needed when you got there, and you had the balls to do it. You were like, oh, I'm going to stick 2 key of 20 millers out and fish a 20 miller straight out the bag, and and you caught virtually the entire stock of the lake.
I'll be honest, it wasn't actually the balls, it was the naivety, you know. That's how I fished, and I fell on my feet, you know. That's, I was 21 years old then. I wasn't the angler that I would say I am now. And once you've had a bite, it's very easy to recreate something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, once you've done something once, it's very easy to do it again.
The timing dropped perfect as well, wasn't it? Like, if you'd have gone on that lake 3 years later, it might have been something that wasn't your... I mean, not saying you wouldn't have adapted to whatever was working, but like you say, it was kind of meant to be, wasn't it, I think?
I think, you know, that capture of Chunky, I'm pretty sure, has led to me being on the phone to you right now. I've got absolutely no doubt about that. I've thought about that many times in my life, and I wondered if I hadn't caught more that at Yateley, would the company that picked me up for sponsorship, would I have finally made a living from carp fishing? The answer is maybe not, you know. Those fish were as famous as any in the country, and you know, that gave me the platform to be seen, you know. And it was all obviously the dream, having read Terry Hearn's book as a kid, like there probably was for many people around my age, you know. You're 16 years old reading Terry Hearn's book, thank God, we're going to make a living out of carp fishing. But there's not many people that ever did, and I'm sure that capture of Chunky, which led to the other captures from the other ones from Yateley, were very much behind where I am now.
Yeah, definitely. And you seem to have been somebody that fits very well in that scene. I mean, you know, Terry Hearn was on that lake at the same time we were there, so not only did you kind of get to have a dream year and then, you know, finish up the following year, like you were doing it in front of probably the best and most famous angler in the country right in front of his eyes, and then continuing.
He was in the next peg.
and then yeah. managed to kind of maintain something that he's done and no one else has really done in carp fishing, and that's to be a nice guy and liked. Like, it's quite a bitchy sport at, on certain levels, isn't it? There's a bit of jealousy about there, and some people get offended by other people that have more time than them, or you know, or kind of make it happen. You know, there are.
I had this on Facebook the other day, right? I was like talking to Dave Levy, and he was saying if everyone had two nights, then it would be a totally different ball game. The elite wouldn't be the elite, and that's how it is. But that's not how I see it in any way, shape, or form. I see it as the guy that wants it the most, and if it's the guy that's in the gym the most, if he's in the gym twice a day, 7 days a week, he's going to be the biggest guy in the best shape. And the guys that go fishing the most, they sacrifice other things in their life to go fishing, and they have the best results. Now, that to me is hard work. And if you want to work hard at something to achieve something and you get there, then I'll pat you on the back and say, well done. I'm not, oh, he caught it in 5 nights, he caught it in 10 nights, it took him 1,000 nights. Who cares how long it took him? This isn't a sport as in who's the best. It's like, we all want to catch the same thing. And if you get there through hard work or you get there through good luck, then it doesn't matter. You know, you should be congratulated accordingly.
100%, yeah. I mean, I totally agree with your philosophy. Me and you had many chats years ago about various different things, sometimes drunk, sometimes not drunk, but we would put the world to rights occasionally. And, you know, I always had that philosophy. I've been to a level of success on a number of different things in my life, you know, other than fishing. And it doesn't happen by accident. It does it because, like say, you sacrifice other things or you put the effort in. It can happen, luckily. You know, you look at how many people caught the lady on their first night on the lake or their first fish out the lake. You know, that wasn't uncommon. And, you know, Terry Earn took 60-odd nights to get it. You know, one of the best anglers in our lifetime. So it can... There can be a luck element, which is why I think the lines become blurred in fishing sometimes. And there's only certain type of people that want to put other people down for being successful. And I think that's not just fishing. It's, you know, lots of walks.
British mentality at times, isn't it? Don't you think? It does gripe me a bit, I've got to admit, you know. It doesn't faze me when people say it about me as such, but it bothers me that people think like that, that they're trying to, when someone's achieved something, the only reaction they've got to it is they want to cut them down rather than say, well done.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just Britain, but there's a certain type of people that somebody being successful shows up their own inadequacies. So, especially if it's something that they would love to do themselves, i.e. catch the lady or whatever the fish is, or and so they want to look at a reason to go, oh well, he's full time, or he gets free bait, or you know, they want to find a reason to knock it because it makes them feel bad about themselves because they're never going to achieve that or they're never going to do it. And it's sadly, it's a human nature thing.
It's a shame.
I'm pleased for somebody. You know, I'm a positive person generally, and I'm pleased.
It is obvious though, isn't it, like that without time and without the support of, like, say, a sponsor angler like myself has come, obviously it would be more difficult to achieve the results. I've got no bones about that, you know. That's a fact, you know. If I had to fish Friday and Saturday nights every week and arrive at the lake at, say, 6 p.m. every week, and that was the only way I fished, my album would be probably 1/100th of what it is now. So I fully understand that having the opportunity and doing the time, that has a massive bearing on what I catch. But why people feel the need to be negative about that rather than saying, well, he puts the time in, he's worked towards that, and that's why he's doing what he's doing, then, yeah, that's real bad human nature trying to be negative. I don't think fishing should be looked as, carp fishing, especially big carp fishing, should be looked upon as competitive and compares one guy to the next guy. It should just be, he's doing that, congratulations, well done, he's doing that at that level, and well, same to him too.
Certainly, you know, I completely agree. And the thing people miss is that you don't just get people giving you bait, you don't get companies sponsoring you, it doesn't just happen. You have to kind of earn that in the first place. And some people are so passionate about whatever their industry is that they put themselves in that position. You know, I'm sure you had many sick days off work, and you know, and bent the rules, or as I did, you know, I'd pick jobs that gave me the time that I needed to fish. If I couldn't fight the rat race on the weekends, I found a career that would enable me to fish midweek, and that was a life choice that I made from the age of 15, I think.
Yeah,
you know, when
everyone's in control of their own destiny.
Yeah, it's, you know, I knew that fishing was the only thing I wanted to do when I was young. You know, I was 15, 16, I was skiving school and you know, just to go fishing. So I made sacrifices. I took a job in a 24-hour garage working at night because it was 3 days on, 3 days off, and that like rotated. So I'd get, you know, 2 or 3 weeks a month I'd be fishing midweek on Horseshoe, and I chose to do that. I took a night job in the factory. You know, music was always my life, which was weekend work. I had no social life because of it, but it meant I could fish Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and that was my choice because I didn't want to do that. And I think if you're the guy that he needs a 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, and you know, he needs the missus and kids, and to know that he's getting his wage every month paid into the bank and has no worries, and then it's going to sit there moaning about people that do it a different way and have more time to fish, then that knocks me a little bit, because you know, you've chose what to do for your own peace of mind, and then you put me down for doing something different. That,
yeah,
you know, I might not know how I'm going to pay my mortgage next month, but I do know I'm going to have 4 nights on the bank this week. You know, it's kind of a bad, yeah. I mean, not so much. I'm saying me. You know, I haven't spent 4 nights a week on the bank in 4 years, really. But my I haven't got that drive to go fishing syndicate waters anymore. I just haven't got it in me anymore, I don't think. But I'm talking more generally, you know, it's people make those choices and they make sacrifices, and other parts of their life might suffer because of it, you know, maybe financially or not having a social life or a partner or whatever. But the fact is when somebody does make those sacrifices, like, why put them down for it, you know? And going back to the jealousy thing,
it's their choice, isn't it? It's their choice. It's like everyone's got their choices, and they should be entitled to that.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, there's a couple of people that have remained popular even though they've kind of gone down that route, and you know, Terry was one of them. You don't often hear anything bad said about Terry, and you're another one, I think. I never hear anything bad about you. You know, you can kind of be the guy everybody, like, you know, is a little bit envious of. I'd love to be fucking living that life. I'd love to have just done 6 weeks on the Orients catching 50s and 60s, but I've never heard anybody be really negative, if you know what I mean, about yourself or about Terry. You know, two guys that have managed to pull it off, and you know, to me, you've been the modern day Terry Hearn. Terry's still about doing his stuff, but you know, you've got equally as impressive CV and have managed to remain very well liked in the fishing community for that entire period as well, which is not easy to do, I don't think. So
a nice compliment.
Props to you, you know, you've done it, you're still doing it. You're probably the most requested guest we get on the Carpcast as well. You know, we get messages literally every week, when's Darrell on, when's Darrell on? And I'm like, I'm working on it, but I've not got a phone at the minute.
Well, you've got a good story this time, you know. I think it's probably going to be one of my best. I might have not told it quite as well as it could have been told, as I could write it, because I'm sort of strolling around in my front room trying to relive it to you, but it was an amazing experience trying to overcome a lake like that, to catch them in the way that I did, and then to have the guard to fish turn up with a gun, to watch my car blow up while I'm playing a 50 pounder in, and then have to do the Tour de France to get home, you know. And now I'm sitting in my front room vehicle-less. I just shaved my beard off, that was like absolutely mammoth, and you're thinking, yeah, now I've got to go and buy myself a new vehicle. It's going to be definitely going to go down as one of my best stories, and when I tell it properly and right, and I'm sure people will be reminded about me for some time.
Well, I'm sure we're going to see you at the Northern Anglia show this year as well. Hopefully you'll do your stint on stage as well, and maybe relive some of it with pictures and everything in February. But we'd love to have you back on. I know you've got plenty more stories, I know from personal experience, and we've hardly touched on anything about your sort of past fishing. So if you'd be happy to come back on at a later stage, we'd love to have you.
No problem at all. That's all cool with me. It's pretty easy, this. You know, I haven't got to do anything but talk.
Yeah, it's a nice format. I don't know if you've listened to any of the Carpcasts, but it's a really good format for me to get my opinions out, which I've never been scared of doing. But a lot of the guests seem to have enjoyed it as well, because you can kind of say things how they are. There's no censoring.
I think that's sort of why I've got the sort of following that I have, because I do tell it as it is. You know, like I could stand here and tell you that I fished the Orient at 150 metres, I'll be telling you absolute lies, and I'd rather be cut down for having done something that everyone else is doing anyway than for not telling the truth.
Yeah, like I say, that's what people like. People like the honesty, like the genuine stuff. You know, it was the same with the Mark Holmes. We've had him on twice, actually, Mark Holmes. And, you know, love him or hate him, he's definitely a Marmite type person. But people do like the fact that he says it, calls a spade, you know, and you've got the same qualities, although slightly less controversial than him. what's next anyway? What's on the horizon for the next few months? You've got anywhere planned?
Well, absolutely out there, actually. I've got two weeks to get myself another passport, and then Corda are dragging me to Japan for 2 weeks. Wow. To film a new TV show. So I'm going carp fishing in Japan, which is pretty absolutely out there. But as my personal fishing, I haven't really got a lot on. I've sort of done my load as such with my missus. I've got a missus, I've got a house, I've got another life to live, and luckily she's let me go away and do something that's been on my lifelong bucket list. But now I've got to repay that, and that means day fishing locally to home, doing the deck. We just moved the decorating, you know, so I've got some other requirements to be getting on with over the winter.
Yeah, back to normal life, back to recovering the bank balance as well. A new car, I guess.
Yeah, well, emptying the bank balance on the new car, yeah.
And some brownie points so that you can vanish next spring.
Yeah, you know that, you know.
You know. All right, Keys, well, thank you ever so much for talking to us. It's a pleasure, and I hope you get your car sorted and insurance and all the necessary bullshit you have to go through now.
Yeah. No worries.
No worries. Cheers. Cheers, dude. Thank you very much.
All right, mate. I'll see you in the future.
So we haven't done Worth a Look for a little bit. Carp TV, you noticed something this time. They're on their 100th edition.
Worth a Look.
Yeah, that's quite a milestone. So well done to Joe Morgan and the team.
Yep, Joe's another person, actually, that we've spoke about coming on the Carpcast. He's just done his around the world tour. And it'd be quite interesting to speak to him about that, some of the places that he's been. And obviously his carp catching expertise. I actually did, I've done two different carp TVs over the years, where they come out and you go fishing on a lake with them. I did one on Nash's Lake many years ago, potentially cost me that 4x4 fish. I told the story the other week of when I was stalking it. Couldn't actually get a chance to put a bait in front of it because of the filming. But I did another one a few years later on Cromwell. I did catch a fish on the Zig. But yeah, it was a fantastic idea to do a DVD magazine. It's all on the net now. It's Nick who films. He's a fantastic cameraman. Nick actually filmed both My Knowledge DVDs, and which you can buy on eBay. Search Jamie Classic, The Knowledge. And Joe Morgan presents it. He was a fantastic angler, interesting guy, very popular. I used to love his passion for making tea and biscuits, as a man after our own heart. But yeah, they're on their 100th edition, so big congratulations to them. We'll be old and even more hairless, I guess, before we hit 100 editions of the Carpcast.
Well, you can't get any more hairless, but I'm rapidly catching up.
Yeah, well, it's definitely worth a look. Something else that's worth a look, the Fox Edges DVD is out as well. Volume 3.5, is it?
It is 3.5, and it's another epic. You know, I've got a good 3 hours. I'll get you in, sat down and tuck in. I've watched bits and bobs because I haven't had that much time, to be honest. I've kind of skimmed through it. But it starts off with Lewis Porter, Scott Day and Harry Charrington on a France trip. And as you'd expect, they have a draw. They catch some lumps. Now, I don't know what you think about this, but they do it in that kind of like reality TV TOWIE sort of format where there's a bit of action and then they're like chatting about it or telling the story after it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like they do on the reality TV. I'm not quite sure if it works for fishing, but then again, I just hate all reality TV.
Corder have been doing some new stuff as well. They've just filmed, we spoke about it before, but they've just done the new series of Thinking Tackle where they went to Balaton, didn't they, in Hungary, and they've kind of been taking it out and about. They've been doing a bit more of an exploring type thing, but I've seen on Facebook that they've also been filming a new show, which is completely new, I think. It's going to be on Freeview. I forget which channel now, but they started off in Venice, in Italy. There was a picture of Tom Dovinali and the rest of the gang on a gondola in Venice, and the following day holding up pictures of fish from, I'm presuming, somewhere near Venice, but they certainly were catching carp. So it's a completely new series, that one. I'm very interested to see. It's great that... you know, fishing is getting into general media on normal TV. We spoke loads about the big fish off in the early Carpcast. They do seem to be taking it to another level as far as the TV goes, Corder. Very interesting to see how it goes. I like the fact that they're doing original stuff. You know, we've spoke with Mark Pitchers about the challenges that they do, and him and Harry go out filming those for Fox. It's good to think. I think variety is the spice to it, to keep it interesting.
Yeah definitely. But we went off on a bit of a tangent there. Should we get back to this Edges DVD?
Yeah, well, you've seen more of it than I have. I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it yet.
Yeah, there's after that, there's, I honestly can't remember this kid's name off the top of my head, but it's some great footage floater fishing.
Yeah.
Then this is a bit I have watched in its entirety, and I was kind of skipping forward to this bit. You know the Wood Common in Spitfire Pool?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lewis Porter catches it.
Is that on video, is it?
That is on video. Oh, what a wow. Fish.
I knew he'd had it.
Yeah, just over 50.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a fantastic carp that is anyway, but to have that on video, I think, is pretty amazing.
It's worth watching it just for that. And... I'll let you watch it yourself, but there's a little surprise about another fish he had at the end of it that's just up the road.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, don't...
It doesn't tell you the full story off, it just gives you a quick shot of it, but I recognised it instantly, and, well done, Lewis. That's all I'll say on those.
Yeah.
Two brilliant fish. And, yeah. Also, another interesting one, I'd watched this one in its entirety, I just kind of got sucked into it, was Rob Hughes doing his underwater thing with a twist.
Yeah.
Rob wasn't the diver this time, he was having his own approach analysed.
Okay.
Which was an interesting turnaround. You just, you know, obviously the amount of dive hours Rob's put in and inspecting rigs and that. Yeah, you'd expect him to do everything perfect.
Well,
so watch the video.
He's a very competent angler, we know that, and I'm interested to watch this. I'm going to check it out before the next show. We can maybe chat in a little more detail about it.
Yeah, and you know, the maker, father, and son team go Walthamstow, catch a ton of fish.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Not surprising at all. But we've been rolling a long time now, so I think it's a good time to wrap up Carpcast 17. Big thank you once again to our sponsor, DNA Baits. DNABaits.com. You can use the discount code CARPCAST5 and get a 5% discount off everything. And the £20 CARPCAST EVO offer is still on there as well. £20 delivered free, the cured hook baits and the top quality GLM powder. So check it out and all the other stuff that they've got on DNABaits.com. CromwellLake.co.uk is where you can find out all info about Cromwell, and NorthernAnglingShow.co.uk. You can get tickets and check out all the VIP special packs for the Northern Angling Show. Until episode 18, we'll see you again.
See you next time.